Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this episode, the numbers we're going to be talking about are the television ratings for the 2015-2016 television series, or season, I mean. And at least from my perspective, it was a really good TV season. There was tons to watch. So, Sam, you've been looking at these numbers for quite some time. You were very kind to crunch all the numbers, which I really appreciate. It makes this a lot easier on me for these episodes. How did this season shape up?
Average. There's nothing new under the sun. Down from the previous season, but that's been that way for 30 plus, since the advent of cable television, that numbers remain the same.
Well, as there are more options to watch on television, I think these days also with the streaming services and just so many things competing for our time, the overall collective ratings going down, I think that's just a given.
You know? That is an interesting theory. And a logical theory.
Now you're going to tell me it's wrong.
I'm not going to tell you it's wrong. I'm going to tell you the data doesn't support it.
Okay.
Lots of people like to blame streaming, blame DVRs, blame whatever. The aggregate rating numbers, or the total percentage of the population watching TV at any given moment, hasn't changed much since... It increased from the early days of television up until the early 80s and has virtually gone unchanged since then.
Okay.
It's just split between 400-some channels now instead of between three channels.
Got it. So the same amount of people are watching TV more or less percentage-wise.
Yep.
But it's just because there's so many different options that we've got lower ratings on individual shows, almost making it seem like the concept of broadcasting has really become just parallel narrowcasting.
Yes. Yeah. That is extremely true.
And, you know, I'm kind of good with that because I'd rather have shows geared exactly to kind of what I want and then have, you know, you watch whatever geared to what you want to watch and stuff versus them trying to do fewer shows that are just, yeah, okay.
There's a good and a bad to that. The good to that is, sure, absolutely, you can look at it that way. The bad to that is there's much less money in it for each of the individual broadcasters.
Fair point.
So it's harder to produce a quality show on a lower budget.
Well, I think, and we've seen this on the comic book side too, getting, you know, X amount of an audience, you know, an audience of X size, if you do it with one product, it's obviously more cost-effective than if you did it with, say, 10.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Now, with 10, you can be much more targeted and stuff and maybe make the viewers happy or whatever, but you've split your effort, you've split your resources, and it's just kind of financially, you lose the economy of scale, all that kind of stuff.
The good news is technology is helping, particularly for things like broadcast, or not for broadcasting, for video production.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, there are 13-year-old kids with an iMac sitting in their bedroom that can do more editing and effects than major motion picture studios could, you know, 30 years ago.
I know, it's mind-boggling.
So that's the one place where that is helping.
Well, but I think also the technology on how they can disseminate the material.
Yep.
I don't think, you know, 30 years ago, this much material could have really gotten out to market. It just,
well,
we didn't have
the channels.
Yeah, we didn't have the channels. We didn't have the technology to facilitate it.
Also true. Yeah. And that's the other interesting thing. Technology keeps changing, but they're having to go to splitters and separators and some digital channels. And the cable system in this country, with the average cable provider being able to provide approximately 650 channels, might just be about capacity for the current system.
Well, I think we're going to get to the point where cable companies almost become streaming providers. Just almost out of necessity.
Also true.
You know, it just makes more sense to have an intelligent set-top box or integrated into a smart TV or whatever, and not try to just continually send all the stuff down the pipe if you don't need to. I've got to imagine in almost any given market, there is some esoteric cable channel that they're sending the signal out and nobody's watching, which is just a waste.
Well, we'll get to it when we get to it, but I have actually predicted we will see our first, when the overnight ratings are listed on the morning press release, they are rounded to a tenth of a percentage point. Rounded to a tenth of a percentage point. So a point, you know, a rating of 1.0. They only get the 10th place.
Got it.
Which currently, with 1% being about, I have to look it up again. Shoot, I had that in front of me. Let me get it again. Anyways, my point is, I am actually predicting, we've never seen it, but I am predicting we will see a 0.0 show up on an overnight rating for a broadcast network in this country next television season.
Do you think that would prompt the people reporting the numbers to go to another decimal point?
Possibly. They already do for cable.
It just seems like if you're at the situation where if you don't, it rounds down to zero, that it's like, well, we need more precision, apparently.
Yes.
It'll be interesting to see which decision gets made on that.
Yeah.
So, looking at this overall chart you've got here for the different networks and stuff, it seems like the ratings, I mean, it seems like CBS did pretty well this time around.
Absolutely.
In one or two areas, like the 18 to 49 drama share, it looks like Fox did really well.
What?
Or am I misreading that?
Trying to think where.
I'm seeing a 5.05 there, which is the biggest number in the...
Oh, you're right. Okay, yes. Fox, I'm trying to... overall. Yeah, yes, it did. If you look at their comedy, though, you will notice a much smaller number.
Yes, whereas you get a much bigger number. The biggest number we see here is on CBS 18 to 49 comedy share.
Yes, and what that really speaks to is how bad Fox is at everything else. The reason CBS has the largest comedy rating, if you go down below and we look at the top, you know, 10 or whatever, number one is Empire. The strength of Fox's overall share for dramas is entirely related to Empire.
That makes sense.
The strength of CBS's comedy number is related to the number two show, The Big Bang Theory. However, CBS has a bunch of others that are at least respectable.
But it shows how one outlier show, in terms of how it's doing, Empire, Big Bang Theory, in those two cases, can really kind of skew the overall number.
Yeah. Well, and CBS, though, like I said, has Life in Pieces, has Mom, has Two Broke Girls, has some other things to go with it. Fox, unfortunately, had an atrocious year and had really nothing else much to go with Empire except The X-Files, which is also number three on the list. It was a limited show. It only ran 10 times, you know, all those things. But Fox's number is almost entirely composed of those two shows.
Wow. I mean, on the one hand, great that they've got some really strong shows, but it comes down to, if you were kind of the programming exec, do you want to have those one or two breakout hits, or do you want to have just overall a reasonably strong, maybe not stellar, but a strong lineup where you're not so reliant on a particular show? Because, I mean, sooner or later, Big Bang Theory is going to end.
Probably two more seasons. It's signed through year 10, and I'm not sure we're going to get more than that.
10's a really long run for a sitcom. Yep. I mean, the fact that it starred younger actors a decade ago, I mean, gives them, I mean, I don't think it's a show that you could run for another 10, 20 years, but you at least have actors that are likely to live that long.
Yes.
You know, Golden Girls, not going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, interesting. All right.
By the way, the adult 18 to 49 numbers around 700,000 for a 1 rating, which means a 0.0 would have to be lower than a 10th, which would have to be lower than 70,000, and half of that, Yeah, so I actually am predicting there will be a show watched by less than 35,000 18 to 49-year-olds next season.
Wow, that puts the comic numbers in an interesting perspective. Because, I mean, a lot of titles are doing around that. Not a lot, oh, a lot, but enough.
Hang on, sorry. I was looking at the 18 to 34. 18 to 49, the number, is about 1.6 million.
Okay, so it'd be about 80,000 at that point.
Yes, it'd be about 80,000. So okay. In order to get a zero, you need 80,000 or less people. 18 to 49.
To kind of fall off the metric almost, on the TV side, you're still a pretty solid seller on the comic side.
Oh, absolutely. You usually make in the top 10.
That's funny. Again, just shows what a different metric and stuff the two mediums are on. And nothing right or wrong about it. I mean, everybody's got a couple of TVs in their house, and few of us, other than, say, Comixology, have an actual comic store in our house.
That is true.
Yeah.
Which can be dangerous, though, if we did.
Yes. Yes, it say, certainly could be.
I think you spend too much on comics now.
I most certainly do. Anything else on the overview, or do we want to start going network by network?
Do you want to go down through, like, the top 10 or so? And
okay,
maybe,
sure.
Yeah, the networks we can do, and maybe not have to go through every show.
Okay.
Again, Empire, solid. Big Bang Theory, solid. X-Files, huge surprise for Fox. Modern Family at ABC, next best rated comedy. ABC also does really well with its comedies between shows like The Modern Family and some other ones we'll get to. Grey's Anatomy, Thursday nights over at ABC, still doing very well, still being led by Grey's Anatomy. When we get over there, we'll see. In its 12th season, I was shocked when I saw that.
I watched the first couple of seasons.
Okay.
But it's one that's got a lot of kind of graphic medical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of times it's like, I just can't watch this like while I'm eating or something.
Yep.
It's really good at what it does. It's just what it does, you know, isn't something that I was able to kind of deal with the visuals and stuff, because it was good drama, soap opera type stuff. But it got to the point where it's like, you know, I don't need to keep going with that. And they were getting, I felt a little bit more of the operating room type stuff than I really had the stomach for.
Yeah.
If they had done that show with like a next to zero special effects budget, I'd still be watching probably. But that's just squeamish me.
But it's a popular show. It does well. Yeah. You're not you'd be with, I don't want to say the majority, because again, we're still talking 2.2% of adults in the country. So you know, we're not talking staggering numbers.
But 12 years is staggering.
Yes.
All right. Next,
NCIS over at CBS still doing well. Still has one of the largest overall audiences, which just means the people over 50 still really like that show.
Mm-hmm.
And the people 18 to 50 still watch it in solid numbers. Scandal, Goldberg's, Life in Pieces, and How to Get Away with Murder round out the top 10. What's amazing there is Scandal at 7, How to Get Away with Murder at 10. That is ABC's entire Thursday night lineup in the top 10.
Yeah, well, and they're all Shonda Rhimes shows, right?
That is correct.
Again, having three shows, both for the network and for a particular creator in the top 10, very impressive.
Yeah, and that tends to happen. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays across many, many years now, some network figures out how to own at least one of those three nights. Fridays have become a non-factor, which is a phenomenon of the last 20 years. Fridays actually used to be a very good television night. They're not anymore. And Mondays are so dedicated to sports that it's hard to really dominate on Mondays. People don't think about it, but aside from Monday Night Football, the NCAA tournaments are always on Mondays. Most of the major sports, the NCAA football championship is on Mondays. The basketball championship is on a Monday. Monday is a kind of a sports night.
Honestly, I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't watch sports.
You don't watch sports, so yeah. But Monday and Friday are in kind of their own category.
No, and that makes sense. I mean, if you've got family, you know, with kids or whatever, sometimes you've just got stuff doing on those nights and stuff. So, and if you don't, maybe you're spending Friday nights not at home watching TV.
Yeah, there you go. You want to go through them network by network?
Yeah, let's do that.
Pick one.
Let's just go alphabetical.
ABC! Yay! You know, pure rank order. Modern Family, Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, Goldbergs, How to Get Away with Murder, Middle, Blackish, Once Upon a Time, Fresh Off the Boat, Muppets, Quantico, Last Man Standing, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and we can keep going past that if you want. Anything particularly in here that you want to talk about? Because I want to just run through the list.
We've already touched on the Shonda Rhimes shows.
Yep.
We're already on fifth season of Scandal, again, 12th of Grey's Anatomy and stuff. So, I mean, that's they've got somebody who knows exactly what they're doing and doing a great job there. We're on the fifth season of Once Upon a Time.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing a really good job of having very strong narrative arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're wrapping one up, they're kind of teasing and kicking off the next one, but at a good, like, end of novel sort of a way. So yes. I'm curious how long they can run with this. They've gone a lot further than I thought they maybe could have, but I'm still enjoying it. So it's
here's what's interesting. The audience is off about half since the show started.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's unusual. What is unusual, there's very few shows, if you read articles, read television reviewers, check internet postings about television shows, where unpopular shows have, some of them have an amazingly loyal small fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And Once Upon a Time has that. Once Upon a Time also has the It's a Big Hit. It's kind of big, broad-based fan base. But Once Upon a Time has that is unusual. And there are shows that have it, but not many. They seem to have a large, invested audience of former viewers that are invested in it failing.
Really?
Yes, the people that don't like that show particularly don't like that show and are very vocal in those types of places, including reviewers. It's weird.
I can understand it because
there's a group of people that feel like they were betrayed somehow by the show.
Yeah, I can sense that because they've got this book mentality to it, and there are a couple of times it's like, but wait, that's not the direction I wanted you to go. I can see people having that.
Yeah, it's just there's very few shows that, you know, when you write about how you think a show will be canceled or is being canceled, where you get a lot of pushback from, or you get pushback from the fans. When you write about how a show's doing well, you don't usually get a lot of pushback. Once Upon a Time is one of those shows where you do.
What I think is going to wind up eventually being the Achilles heel of this show, while I think they've done a good job kind of world building and going in a lot of different directions very creatively and expanding their premise, in scope, but everything centers around essentially one family and their, you know, their relatives or whatnot. And there comes a point where if they had not gone so strong with the family ties of the lead characters, I think it would have been easier to rotate in other people over time and potentially shift who the lead is and literally keep this going indefinitely.
Interesting. It's funny because, for some of us more comic book fans, this always felt like, even though it tried and was sold and optioned, it doesn't look like we're probably ever going to get Fables on television.
No, I think this almost precludes it. We feel redundant and derivative, even though it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. It is what it is. That book did the same thing, though. It really ended up focusing on one family for the vast, you know, once you, I don't know how spoiler we get for a book.
No, I know what you mean.
It focused on one relationship, and then when that relationship became a family, it kind of focused on that family.
No, I agree with that. I guess it just seems like almost every lead character in Once Upon a Time, and I'd have to go through the list of who is in the opening credits from season to season type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But literally all of them are connected to the family.
Yeah.
Whereas, at least in Fables, while you had that central family and that relationship that was kind of the core of it, there were also a lot of other people that, while they interacted with the family, were not part of the family.
Yeah.
And they've been able to do spinoffs, Jack of Fables, the Cinderella stuff. I think they've got Ever After starting up soon. Because they they have a little bit wider of a tapestry.
Yep.
To my mind, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there's going to come a point where Robert Downey said, you know, hey, it's been fun. I'm done being Iron Man. Whatever. Great. They do some other characters. They've built up, you know, a wide roster. And then after he's been kind of, you know, we haven't seen Iron Man for, you know, 6-7 years maybe, they cast somebody else, Iron Man comes back into the fold. Or that kind of rotation. Or they just deal with other characters. With Once Upon a Time, they had that potential, but it's gotten so tied into a very core group of characters that I think they've lost that potential.
To be fair, I stopped watching early in season 2, so... again, I was one of those people that wasn't thrilled by the way it went at one point. But again, I don't feel the need to... I check on it because I check on all the TV numbers, but mm-hmm. I don't actually know what's going on in the show or care that much, like some fans.
Yeah.
But what I think the fact that it uses beloved characters that there are already a bunch of takes on, it's very easy to upset people as well.
Yes.
Because every time they introduce someone, you run the risk of being, that's not how I always envisioned that person or that character.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a problem DC's been having as it's tried to do different takes on various characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, the new 52 version of thus and so isn't how I think it ought to be, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something to be said for if you go back to a iconic or familiar character, there's a lot of room for interpretation and a lot of room for a corresponding pushback.
Well, yeah, and we talked about this quite a bit on the Mail Report. Same thing. You know, both in Marvel too with the Cap and Sam Wilson thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's got their core. You know who we think the Justice League are. We did on the teleconference yep. last month. You get all these weird different answers, yet everyone is very convinced that if you don't see it their way, you're doing it wrong.
Well, and like when they in Once Upon a Time brought in Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are a lot of people that have very definitive, this is what I think Robin Hood is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that's been around for so long that everybody is equally right and wrong. But when you do a TV show and say, nope, this is the take we're doing, hopefully it's a popular enough one that you get enough people and you don't, you know, tick off enough people.
Well, personally, I gave up somewhere around Mulan. Only because Mulan may be a multi-thousand-year-old character. I have no idea. I do know I grew up reading a lot of fairy tales, Germanic family. I got the Grimm brothers in the original German. I got them mm-hmm. in English back here in the States. All that's, you know. So I kind of know the fairy tale, what I think. I know the fairy tale characters pretty well. And some of them, you go, that's not the character, but that's the Disney version, so I understand that at least. Mulan was like, to me, whether it's accurate or not, is like, oh, you're just shoehorning in some Disney-created character.
I was okay with it because I like the actress they cast.
Yeah, she might have been fine, but I just, you know, again, to me, who grew up on the Grimm's brothers, is like, she's not part of this world.
Grimm is still on the air, right?
Grimm was on the air this season.
Okay. The reason I ask is I know Once Upon a Time has had...
And Grimm will be on the air next season, actually.
Once Upon a Time's had like a graphic novel adaptation or original story or whatever. By Marvel, I believe.
Right.
Grimm has had comics done on it.
Yes.
Talk about a really interesting crossover for a comic. Grimm and Once Upon a Time. You've got the happy, almost lovey-dovey Once Upon a Time and the somewhat higher death toll, I think, over on Grimm and the darker take on it.
But again, focusing on one family. That conversation.
Yeah, that's true.
It's about the brothers.
That's true.
It really is about the family.
One of the other shows here, Quantico, that show focused on a particular character, but also a class of trainees at Quantico and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a really interesting season and brought in some very fun characters and kept bringing in characters and really played with the whodunit aspect, who can you trust aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also one of those, a la Lost, where they were splitting between kind of the current time and, you know, 6-9 months back or whenever when they were being trained. And that split time thing worked well for the first season, but it seems like a show that the DNA of it almost has to change for a second season. And I'm curious how that's going to play out.
It is interesting. Quantico is a show that is renewed and will be back. However, interestingly, did much better early than late. It lost, when the show debuted in September, it had a 1.9 rating its first episode and its second episode. Through October, it was 1.6s. Through November, it was 1.3s and 4s and 5s. By December, it was 1.1s and 1.2s. By the time it came back in March, it was 1.1s, and by the time it went off the air, it was 1s and 0.9s.
I'm not surprised by that.
So it was losing in audiences.
Because it had a really strong opening,
mm-hmm.
but it really took until the end of the season to kind of have everything play out satisfactorily. And there were a lot of twists and turns and kind of double backs on the who-could-have-done-it angle. And there comes a point where it's like, you know, if you don't make some solid progress on this, and you just keep introducing more possible suspects, give me a break. So I can see where people might have gotten ticked off by it. I thought they had a really strong cast and some really good writing, but there were also a couple of things where I think they could have taken some subplots, dumped them entirely, tightened the thing up, and had, if this were like a Netflix show or a BBC show where it would have been just a 10, 60-minute long episodes or some such, they could have done something amazing. Yeah. And what they did was good. But it makes me wonder, can the show survive going to a second season?
Yeah, and the other thing that's amazing is I read through those dates. Quantico had 22 episodes, what is considered a full season in current times. It was off the air for almost 3 months.
Yeah, it took me a while during to get back on it after the hiatus.
Well, and it's not just... It's just the way it is now in modern television. And I sometimes wonder if programmers have... Those huge hiatuses are there for really two reasons. And they're an interesting mess, I'll say that. Because I'm not sure what you're trying to do with those.
It seems to me part of the reason for the hiatus is to give them time to show reruns during the middle of the season type stuff, reuse the episodes, give them a little bit more time to do some production, give the crew and cast some little break during the holidays and stuff. But it does seem like, depending how long that break is, you wind up with two half seasons, and it can really kill the story momentum between them.
Mm-hmm.
What Once Upon a Time tends to do is treat them as literally half seasons and have a good beginning, middle, and end of an arc, tease what the next book is going to be, go to the hiatus, and then come back, reestablish, pick up, go on as if it's the next novel.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. It is interesting. There's a lot of... What's interesting is the second season after the hiatus is tending to start in March, which means they don't really trust any of these shows to be on for the February sweeps.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. one of the shows that does tended to the two times it was aired, 2 years it was aired, being that period, though, was Agent Carter.
Now, Agent Carter tended to be in January.
Okay, fair enough.
It was the dumping ground of nobody's paying attention right after the holidays, getting ready for sweeps.
Before sweeps. I was thinking it lasted into it. My bad.
Let me take a quick look just to verify that. I will actually check its air dates. But go ahead and make your point.
Agent Carter, though, is one where they had a shorter season, more focused stories, very kind of a serial plot line with good payoff in each episode. It was a lot of fun. But they also ended it on, not a cliffhanger, but something to kind of kick off the next storyline that'll go obviously unresolved since there's not going to be a next season. But when I was at the Fan Expo in Dallas, Haley Atwell was there. She plays Agent Carter. And she very much loves the character and very much thinks the origin of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a story that needs to be told in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, one that she would happily participate in. And actually was doing a fairly convincing job, I think, lobbying for, hey, let's use the character more, let's do something. Not, hey, let's go to another season, but movie, TV movie, there's more story to be had here. There's more story that in that universe kind of needs to be told.
Yeah. Lobbying to be in the movies instead of on television, any good actress would do that anyways, right?
Well, she's basically saying, hey, keep me employed, and here's how you could do it, and here's why. Yeah. Of course she's going to do it. But she's thought it through and had not just a, I want money, it's a, this is the story reason why just the story should be told.
Yes.
And I respect that.
You are correct. It aired right through the heart of sweeps. The February sweeps period this year was February 4th to March 2nd. Agent Carter aired, looking at it, every week from January 19th to March 1st.
Yeah, I was thinking it did that.
Yep. So absolutely right in the heart of the sweeps period.
Now, related to Agent Carter, of course, is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I've watched the first half of the third season. Haven't watched the second yet. Just I've had many other shows to watch. How has that been doing in the ratings? Obviously, it looks, according to your chart here, getting renewed for a fourth season.
It is.
There was talk of a spinoff. There's been talk of a spinoff before, but as happened last year, this year again, even though they'd made some casting announcements, it looks like that got shot down.
Well, as... how do I want to put this? Or arguably, it got a spinoff in Agent Carter.
Well, but there was going to be the Bobby and Hunter
yes.
Most Wanted series.
Well, I understand there was going to be more, but it got one.
True. Well, you could argue Agent Carter was also a spinoff of the Captain America movie versus S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay, but it got the S.H.I.E.L.D. time slot on the S.H.I.E.L.D. network during a couple of months.
Absolutely.
You know, the simple thing is, it didn't do that. Agent Carter didn't do that well.
Mm-hmm.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Continues to lose viewers. Again, not unusual, as do most shows.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we should point this out, much like the comics, that is not unusual.
A dwindling audience is it's standard because people rarely jump in the middle of a story, but they're more likely to jump out after they've been in for a while.
And again, dramas, and particularly these more arc-driven dramas, make that less and less the case.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't used to be the case. It's still not really the case in comedies. You know, if you missed last week's Modern Family, you can watch this week's.
Absolutely. And that's with comedies, there's less of that serial narrative going on. The characters grow and evolve, but rarely does something happen in a particular episode that's just a massive status quo change or something. And if there is, it's widely talked about.
Yeah. And dramas, to be fair, used to be that way.
Yes. And some still are. Not many. Some.
Some still are. But yeah, when you start talking about the shows that really have those arcs, again, something we talk about, you know, when we talk about, you know, comics, same thing. You know, now everything's got a 5-6 issue arc. What happened to the standalone issues or just the continuous story issues? Well, television's kind of in the same boat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, it makes it harder to jump on, which means you can do nothing but go down. It's doing okay. A fourth season was virtually guaranteed. Third season shows always get renewed for a fourth season.
Right.
Because if there's any possibility of them getting canceled, the company that's producing them just makes them super cheap to buy to guarantee that fourth season gets made, because then their real money comes in syndication,
mm-hmm.
which they need that fourth season for.
So given that the fourth season was pretty much a lock, so it would get to enough episodes for syndicating,
mm-hmm.
what do you think the likelihood is of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. going to a fifth season?
It ended the season right around a 1.0. For ABC, for a drama, that is right on the line. That is right kind of at the average. So the one argument is, well, it's kind of an expensive show, so they could replace it. Sure. The other argument is it's kind of helping the overall Walt Disney ABC property with the movies and everything else, so you leave it alone. So we'll have to wait and see what happens next season. It's right around where Castle and The Catch were, essentially,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the season. You know, if you take a look at their overall average for the year, that's what, you know, which means you can assume it's going to be there to lower next year. And of those two shows, one got renewed and one got canceled. So,
well, Castle, I think, is worth talking about because I still got the last couple episodes to watch. But the scuttlebutt, my sister and I were hearing, just following, you know, through like Variety and a few other places,
mm-hmm.
Was that it seems, and maybe I'm totally wrong on this, but it seems like there was some friction between Nathan Fillion and Stanislav Katic, so the two leads. to the point that from what I've heard, they may have even been sent to counseling or something. It's like they seem to just not get along, which is a shame because I think their on-screen chemistry is awesome. But she was then not invited back for the next season.
That is correct. Which that I don't know anything about the personal stuff.
And it could be totally wrong. I may be mistaken on that.
The she was not offered a contract for the following season, absolutely accurate.
And then things kind of, I think, went downhill from there. The way it was announced, there was a lot of stuff on Twitter, people going back and forth. Oh, it's not going to be the same show, yada, yada. How come the females are getting replaced, but the guys are staying? All the, you know.
No, that's actually not true. When Stana was not offered a contract, neither was one of the two main guys. Bobby, I think?
No, it was the one who played the medical examiner.
She was gone too, but there was one of the men was not invited back as well.
I thought both of them were. I thought the two cops, Espo and Ryan.
Yeah, it's been 10 years since I watched the show, so yeah, I'm kind of falling apart here.
And I could be wrong. My understanding was the two cops were likely to stay. I hadn't heard anything.
The medical examiner was already gone.
No.
Was she there this season? Okay.
He was there. Not full time, but...
Yeah, I think that had changed already. Yeah, last season there was issues. Most of that is about money.
Well, and I get when a show gets to its 8th, 9th season, you've got to... And particularly with a sizable cast,
yes.
You got to make some cuts. I get that. But cutting one of the two lead characters,
mm-hmm.
to me, would have fundamentally altered the show.
Absolutely.
And had it gone to a 9th season without Stana, I would have still watched, but it wouldn't have been the same show.
Absolutely.
It couldn't have been.
Absolutely. But now try to imagine cutting Nathan and keeping her.
No, that's harder to do.
Which is why that's not the decision they tried. And ultimately, they weren't able to negotiate a contract with Nathan, presumably, or whoever else, that made the show cheap enough to make doing another season viable.
The approach I would have been tempted to try were I in charge, and obviously I'm not because I'm not qualified, but I would have been tempted to keep those two
mm-hmm.
and ditch nearly everybody else. Have something okay. happen that forces them to move. And okay. still solving crimes as a couple or whatever, which really calls into question, were they able to work together well or not? Yeah.
But then it becomes, is that the same show? Don't you want the famous author in Manhattan with his buddies? Or do you want to ship him off to the middle of nowhere as in a small town and it become Murder, She Wrote?
Ship him off to L.A.
It still requires lots of other people. In order to make the show cheaper, you need to not only shrink the cast, but you need to shrink the locales. Where you can have one or two secrets, you know, places to shoot, possibly on a lot instead of in the city.
It just seems to me if you got rid of the two guys who are the cops,
mm-hmm.
the daughter, the mother, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. The lady hanging out at the PI firm,
mm-hmm.
you got five actors you've gotten, regulars you've gotten rid of.
Okay.
And now you basically have everybody else's guests.
Okay.
Or cheaper new actors.
But you still got to pay those guests.
Which you were having to do anyways to fill out the rest of this. My point is, you still have other costs,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not trying to diminish that, but I think the cost of having an actor who's been on for 8 seasons increases, whereas if you were to replace them with a new actor, presumably you're going to be looking for a less expensive one anyways. That's an option. It yeah. fundamentally changes the show.
And it depends what those actors think of themselves and what their agents think of them. And
absolutely.
You know, some of those actors are, thank God I've got a steady job. I will keep doing, you know, I can make that much doing character work and hope to get it, or I can just keep doing this for that salary. And
yeah.
And so, again, a lot of that depends on it. The big contracts are the big contracts, yes. People like Susan Sullivan were, that would be an easy one. You know, that's a big name that probably was making a healthy amount.
But, I mean, ultimately, I think they went the right route. Because I'd rather the series end with the cast intact and the premise kind of having played itself through than let's try to reinvent the thing, either, like you said, as a Murder, She Wrote in New England or wherever.
Yeah.
You know? But it's one of those things where I do start to wonder how much of the behind-the-scenes stuff kind of plays in. Because at one point, I was reading an article, or at least a blog post, on somebody basically saying how – I mean, very feminist stance, how – they've established that the male cops and the crime fighters, they're the heroes, but the female is totally replaceable. And I'm like, whoa. You're forgetting the fact they've replaced one of the guys and a few other things over the history of the show. It was somebody, it felt like they had a little bit of an axe to grind and was trying to cast the events behind the scenes to fit their narrative.
Yeah, well, and this was one of the, you know, this is one of these things. Again, the show was called Castle.
Mm-hmm.
The star of the show was Nathan, regardless of what anybody wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It was not the same show without him. So we can't essentially keep the show and get rid of him. And the show, again, they couldn't make it work financially. At the end of the day, that's what all this is about.
Yeah.
It either works financially or it doesn't. Well, and
8 years tried things is not a bad run.
Yeah, absolutely wasn't a bad run. Why can't I, Kathy Bates made this same complaint several years ago when her show got canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Harry's Law. Oh, of course they canceled my show. You know, they didn't cancel NCIS. They canceled my show. Your show had a fifth of the viewers.
Yeah.
You know, it's got nothing to do with men, women. It's got to do with who's watching and why.
Castle was at the point where ending it makes sense. Just narratively, story-wise, they'd kind of done what I felt they needed to do with those characters, and then some.
Again, on a personal note, I gave up 3, 4, or 5 years ago.
It's not like one of these, there have been some shows where it ends, and it's like, but there's so much more that should be told, it could be told.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I gave up when they shot her.
They've had a couple of times where they go through some crazy stuff just to either reposition the show or bring in a narrative big bad arc kind of a thing or whatever.
It wasn't that. It wasn't that event that made me quit. It was the, which we'd been told from day one, I think her mother had been murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept, you know, the first season, once or twice it got mentioned. The next season it got mentioned maybe 4 or 5 times. By the time it was getting mentioned every week, and somehow her mother's murder was connected to literally every case they ended up with.
Yeah, that's... I went,
this is just silly and stupid.
That's when it was starting to get a little nuts. And when everything gets that centralized around a really bizarre kind of core aspect of their backstory.
Yeah.
You know, but... they had a good cast. I want to see what a lot of these people go do next.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
If there's a show you want to talk about, please.
I was going to say, I don't think I watched anything else on ABC this season.
Okay, well, let's give a quick rundown. The renewed shows, they'll all be back. Let's give a quick rundown on what's not coming back.
Okay.
The Muppets are not coming back. That average number is ridiculously skewed. That was a show that started in the 4 range and ended in the 0.6 range.
Wow.
The average is much higher than anything close to the last 15 episodes did.
I'm a Muppets fan, but the premise of the show and it didn't work for me, so I didn't watch.
My wife, huge Muppets fan, gave up like on the first episode.
Yeah. And
hated it. They did retool the premise when they took their hiatus. I thought the show got better, but no one came back, so it didn't matter.
That's too bad.
As you mentioned, Castle's going, Nashville's going. There are rumors that, it might end up on country music television, probably at a hugely reduced budget.
It was sounding pretty promising, that it was going to happen.
Yep. Which makes, for country music television, that's huge if they can afford it, or if the production company can figure out how to make it cheap enough that they can afford it.
Yeah.
Agent Carter's not returning, not surprising. Oh, The Family's not returning. Again, that was a borderline show to begin with. Shows that were just kind of abject failures from the start. Blood and Oil, Don Johnson's show in the Dakotas, and no one watched. That was doomed almost from week one. Wicked City, a show about Vegas in the 80s. Yeah, it aired 3 times. Most people aren't going to remember it existed.
Mm-hmm.
Of Kings and Prophets, they said, oh, we got an idea. Let's tell the story of King David. Yes, the one from the Bible. But kind of not really tell it, make it extremely graphic. Question the things that make him a Jewish and Christian icon, and like I said, make it graphic, and what do you know, it lasted all of 2 airings. did not work. And Gallivant, a plucky, great little show if you're into what it was, but I couldn't figure out how it came back this season, and it won't be back next season.
Yeah, it's a shame. That seemed like something that was a good idea, but the format just wasn't the right idea.
Yeah, something didn't work on that show. So yeah, it kind of was what it was. Let's move on to CBS.
Okie doke.
Yeah, CBS overall just doing phenomenally well. I don't know. Pick some shows. Supergirl's on here. We definitely have to get to it.
Well, let's start with that one, because
let's do it.
That did well in terms of maybe not the best for the network or whatever, but it started out strong in terms of being accepted and stuff. I think it was not a show that I necessarily would have put on CBS to begin with, and right. It's a show that they've decided to move to CW, which I think is a good thing in so much as it's going to make it easier for that character to play in the same crossovers and whatnot with Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow. I liked the crossover they did with Flash, but it was a little awkward because it was cross-network.
Yeah, and that's certainly one way to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a generous way to look at it.
I enjoyed the show. I'm generous.
No. The show did really well. The show did really well. And by all accounts, if it was any other show, it should be back on the air on CBS next season.
Mm-hmm.
There was no other show that did close to this well. CBS has had issues / problems with its own produced shows. CBS is a partner in the CW with Warner Brothers, who is the producer and owner of this show.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of me that feels a lot of the move to CW was a power struggle between CBS and WB, and Les Moonves essentially saying, you know, you don't want to start doing things my way. I'm canceling your show.
Mm.
There's no good reason Supergirl wouldn't, you know, forget what the title of the show is. There was no reason a show that was as well received, as popular, and all of those things on CBS would be canceled for any sane reason.
My gut feeling is I think the show will do creatively. It will do better on CW. Because
mm-hmm.
I look at some of the other shows on here that I'm watching on CBS. Uh-huh. Scorpion.
Mm-hmm.
The second season was amazing in terms of the writing in all of the wrong ways. There was literally an episode where the first thing they do is some crazy shenanigans to split the team all over LA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then there's an earthquake, and it's like you've shaken up a carbonated beverage, and it's going to explode. Literally, L.A. was going to explode because of an earthquake. Then, okay, the guy with the glasses, he steps on his glasses, he's blind. Oh, wait, he's got to drive something. Oh, that's fine. He's got the kid. The kid's got to drive. And it just got more and more, you know, what are the odds of that happening? And every crazy, contrived obstacle you could throw in front of these people was getting there. And, you know, for a show about geniuses, they treat the audience like idiots. And it didn't feel that way the first season, but by the second season, it was just, that's the way the show is. And then I look also at Limitless, and I thought it started really well, but it had a very unique personality and viewpoint to the show, and the show became almost more about that than the premise of the show. And I just, it seems like shows can lose their way on CBS. And that may have nothing to do with the network whatsoever. But Supergirl moving over to CW, I am okay with, because I think it's a better, it's got more companion shows like it over there. And I look at how some of the stuff on these other shows, you know, I'm watching probably half a dozen or so of these shows, and some of them are just not great.
That may be true. CBS finished second overall this year, if anybody cares, with an average of a 2.4. I'm sorry, 2.3. The average of a 2.4, and the winner was NBC, which we'll talk about when we get there.
Okay.
CBS arguably is the most successful broadcast network producing original content. You take out a few. You take out a few things like the Super Bowl and Sunday Night Football and some other things. CBS clearly wins.
No, and I see that. I'm just looking at some of these things. Rush Hour seemed to have been a decade too late to even come out. I've watched the first couple of episodes. The first one was atrocious. After that, it got okay.
Which one?
Rush Hour.
Rush Hour. It's funny because you wanted that show to be good.
Yeah, but the first episode was a bad retread of the movies. And then they started to own their concept once they got past the pilot. And actually do some things. Yes, it was derivative and a watered-down version of the movies, but it at least was doing some decent things. Elementary in Hawaii Five-O, I am just egregiously behind on. I don't know that I've finished the previous season of Elementary. I think I've watched the first episode of the season of Five-O. Again, Limitless, I love-hate relationship with. Parts of the stuff I really liked. Other parts, it just seemed like a really great concept that they just kind of squandered.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the other side, though, and look kind of at the top end of this.
Okay.
Big Bang Theory, runaway success, best comedy on the air.
Yep.
NCIS, highest viewed show in the country, solid ratings getter on its 13th season. Life in Pieces, I put an asterisk next to. That's the show that got the time slot after the Big Bang Theory.
Ah.
As been proven multiple times, that show will always do well. As soon as they move it away from that show, that slot, it fails. So I don't put a lot of stock in that one yet. Criminal Minds, 11 seasons, still going strong. NCIS New Orleans spinoff, in its second season, doing very well. Scorpion, as you mentioned, I agree, the show's gotten slightly ridiculous, doing very well, though. Mom, Supergirl, Two Broke Girls. CBS is doing really well with some shows that have been around for a long time. It's just, it's a solid network.
True, true. I mean, they've got some shows that have some tenure. They've got some franchises, Criminal Minds, NCIS. I mean, Blue Bloods has been around for a while and doing, you know.
And we'll be back again?
Yeah, doing all right. Person of Interest just finished its 5-year run.
It did.
And the show it ended and the show it started as were completely different. And not in a bad way. It's seriously evolved at times. But it's also one of those things that I think people who liked the show at the beginning might not recognize or like the show at the end. Mm. And I felt a little of that, not quite so much, but with Limitless as well. It just seems like, well, they've got some definite hits, obviously Big Bang Theory and NCIS. I'm not trying to diminish that. They've also got a couple that it's almost surprising made it to air. Rush Hour is a good example of that.
I agree with that. Here's what, when you start looking at and thinking, Rush Hour, essentially the worst show on CBS, so it was clearly canceled. It was the worst, as far as ratings went, it was the worst show they had. It would solidly be in the middle of the pack on any other network.
Fair enough.
So even their bad shows are better than most other places' good shows.
And that's worth pointing out. So, yeah.
I mean, Rush Hour is slightly behind a show we just talked about, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of other shows that were canceled that are, you know, The Good Wife, another show that's been canceled in its 7th season, right there again with a show like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, yeah, there's Limitless, which did get canceled. 1.35 would have been renewed on any other network.
Narratively, though, and maybe it's because they knew they only had the season or something in time to end it that way, it ended on a note where it didn't feel like a mandate that it had to continue creatively.
Yeah, well, and Limitless is interesting. I actually predicted it would get renewed and Code Black would be canceled. Code Black did not do quite as well in the ratings. Code Black actually didn't do quite as well in the ratings enough that they cut its season from 22 episodes down to 18. but then they chose to bring Code Black back and not Limitless.
Interesting.
That one still befuddles me and I can't quite explain.
Okay.
I have a good friend, though, who works on Code Black, so I'm happy for him.
Hey, that works. Good
exactly. For that. It's funny. I saw him slightly after the announcement. I went, because we had talked about the week before. What are you looking at for now? I got this lined up and this lined up. So you're back. He went, I know. I can't figure it out either.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Supergirl, again, is the big one. I was going to say, we did get a question. Kay wanted kind of sent us a few questions for this show. Didn't want to join us, but she did send us some questions. The numbers on CBS, she asked how they think they're compared to the CW numbers. The numbers on CBS, the show averaged, where'd it go? A 1.68, which would make it the highest rated show on the CW by a significant margin, to be fair.
But is CW in as many markets, and is it going to shrink ratings simply because the CW doesn't have the market penetration?
Absolutely. You skipped ahead a question, but yes.
Sorry.
So how does it compare to the numbers of the average CW show? It would have been the best show on the CW.
Uh-huh.
What do you think is going to happen next season? Its numbers are going to go down. What I think is going to be the interesting number for Supergirl is where it falls. It's going to go down. It will not average a 1.6. To be fair, if it stayed on CBS, it wouldn't average that either. It probably right. would average more like a 1.4. The real question is, will it supplant The Flash as the number one show on the CW? My gut is telling me no.
I expect it to do between The Flash and Arrow.
That really, I think, is the interesting one. That's the really interesting one. I don't know where it's going to fall between those two. I think it's got the disadvantage of being on Mondays.
True.
Which we kind of talked about. It's an odd night.
Now, the other question my sister had, and this was something that I've only heard about through her,
mm-hmm.
is how we feel about the casting of who they've got for the U.S. president for the show, and if that actress will draw an audience or be a non-factor. They've cast Linda Carter,
mm-hmm.
Which I was surprised to hear. I think a big fan of Linda Carter. She did a great job as Wonder Woman. She also had a role in Sky High, I think, as like the principal or something. Her as the U.S. president, I think, is a very interesting casting choice, both in terms of I think she's a great actress, and I like how with the DC TV shows, they are very cognizant of the past television history of the various characters, both that, you know, Flash, Supergirl, Superman, all that kind of stuff, but also of just, again, now bringing in a Wonder Woman actress and stuff. I think that's just kind of cool and respectful. You know, I don't think the current crop of TV shows based on DC Comics characters could have happened without all of the ones from decades past. You know, it was a build-up to get here, not just a sudden, hey, it happened. That having been said, really don't know if it's going to make any change on the ratings at all.
I don't think it's going to have any effect on the ratings. There might be a person or two that check it out for the sake of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I missed the first few episodes of Supergirl, not kind of intentionally, it just kind of happened. At which point I went, maybe I'll see it someday streaming, maybe I'll see it someday on, you know, DVD. So I haven't watched the show. But like you said, it's right, it's in Berlanti's style. Right there with John Wesley Shipp. To be fair, he had Dean Cain on this show already this season.
And Helen Slater and Laura Vandervoort. So the two other people who've played Supergirl have been on Supergirl.
Yeah. So I don't, it makes sense. I don't think it's unusual. I think she'll do a fine job.
What I think could happen with the DC TV stuff is, like I was saying with the Marvel Cinematic, you know, if it gets to the point where Stephen Amell says, you know, hey, Arrow's done it, you know, however many season it goes for, you know, and he says, okay, we've played out, you know, that steps down, other shows come into the rotation, if you will, and they just flesh out different parts of the DC universe. And then if later they decide to either bring him back as a guest for Arrow for, you know, an episode or two, great, or get to where they recast or something. There's so many characters in these universes that if you can come, all you got to do is find the next one that you can do a good take on and keep shows in the universe and keep the universe kind of moving forward.
Well, the obvious choice, but you got to wait. You have to wait at this point. Arrow needs to outlast Gotham. As long as Stephen Amell can stick around as long as it takes for Gotham to go off the air,
mm-hmm.
Batman's the obvious choice. He just can't exist in this universe because they've already got that character in Ollie.
Fair enough.
But I mean, that kind of, if you really want to explore it, that's the way to do it. Right now, they can't because of Gotham, which, again, I think is doing a great job, too. We'll get to that. Mm. I think DC is doing a wonderful job. CW, in general, Warner Brothers is dominant on the top of this list.
Well, let's talk about the CW.
Okay, let's give a quick rundown for people interested.
Of what was canceled on CBS?
What was canceled on CBS? You want to go through them?
Let's see. Starting at the bottom, CSI Cyber, Rush Hour, lasting all of those 8 episodes. Did all of them get aired?
8 of them aired. I believe they ordered 10.
Wow. Okay. Again, the pilot for that, horrible. But after that, it was actually surprisingly okay.
Let me rephrase that. 8 aired before the sweeps period ended. At the end of May.
Fair enough.
I quit tracking after that. There's another show we'll talk about that's still airing new episodes as we record this that I only counted up to the end of the season.
Okay. Person of Interest concluded its run after 5 seasons.
Yep.
My sister and I actually caught up on that final season and have recorded an episode, so as soon as I can get that edited, that'll go up sometime, maybe a few weeks. Awesome. Part of what motivated us to do that is Amy Ackert was in Dallas at the convention, and we hadn't watched any of the season. We got a couple of spoilers. Like, yeah, we should probably watch that. The Good Wife, it got canceled. Limitless, we talked about. Angel from Hell. And Mike and Molly.
Yeah, Good Wife had a good run, just finally kind of, again, it wasn't a clear it had to go, but you do have to make room for new shows. Angel from Hell was a disaster from the start. Mike and Molly, again, from what I hear, not a show that had to go. CBS is very strong in its comedies, though. It was one of the 2 lowest rated comedies, and with her film career and some other things, Melissa McCarthy was probably getting harder and harder to deal with and afford.
Mm. I'm a little surprised.
Not that she's a pain, but just the nature of her career would make it hard to schedule and other things.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised why 5-0 got renewed.
CBS has the only people watching television on Friday nights. Don't mess with it.
Fair enough. It's not a bad show. It just seemed like it was not so certain to get this season.
I thought the same thing last season. Yeah, no, I agree. But Person of Interest moving on, Good Wife moving on. We will not have a CSI for the first time in almost 20 years of any variety next season. That's almost shocking. But this version of CSI never really caught on with the audience like previous versions had.
I watched the backdoor pilot for it in whichever other show it was in and was unimpressed. So I never bothered watching CSI Cyber. Yeah.
Neither did I. I've never actually watched any of them. But yeah. And as we talked about, CBS did have the Super Bowl this year, did a 37.7 with a 79 share Super Bowl 50 on February 7th. Good. When you talk about year-end numbers, that's good for a whole tenth of a rating point in the average by itself.
Wow. Yeah. Cool.
which it won't have next season. I think Fox will. It'll be interesting. It's unusual that CBS actually did not come out on top this season. The network with the Super Bowl usually does.
Interesting.
Simply based just on that.
It's a big deal, yeah.
It's a huge deal. Again, we just said 79 share. Those are numbers that are unheard of.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Moving on to the CW. Not surprising, the top 3 shows are The Flash, The Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow. This is the home of DC entertainment on television, and it's amazingly popular. The gap is widening between The Flash and Arrow, which surprises me. To be fair, I'm in that group that watches The Flash and not Arrow. And that was, again, I missed Arrow when it first started, and The Flash I didn't, so yeah.
I think that's part of it, I think, is obviously, you know, 4 seasons of Arrow versus 2 for Flash. People feel it's a little harder to get into a longer show, a longer last show. And also, Flash is a little bit more, I don't say happy-go-lucky, but bright and cheery versus Arrow, where there's kind of, you know, the lead character is basically scowling half the time and grumpy or whatnot. And don't get me wrong, Stephen Amell does it really well. But I can see where it's not the feel-good kind of a show that The Flash can sometimes be.
Yeah, no, and I love The Flash. And the Flash show has made me appreciate the comic character. You know, I think me, you, and I have talked about this. I may have even said it on the Mail Report. The Flash was never probably my least favorite Justice Leaguer for decades. Like, he just runs
Sacrilege.
Fast. He just runs fast. What's interesting about that?
Oh, man. he was one of the first characters I was reading off the rack as far back as The Day It Rained the Flash.
Okay.
They took super science to science fantasy, and literally it's like, oh, I've been turned into water vapor, you know, by Dr. Alchemy and his Philosopher's Stone. Whatever will I do? But he's a scientist. He's smart. So he sped up his kinetic energy, created a lightning storm, and rained himself back together. I'm like, that is mind-boggling, not science. But hey, it was cool.
Absolutely. And it's now, because of the show, I've seen this. I enjoy the books more. I've gone back and read some of the older ones. There is something about that character that's infectious that the description, the fastest man alive, does not convey.
Absolutely. And there have been times that aspect is in the comics. There have been times it isn't in the comics. But there's a lot more to him than he just runs fast.
Exactly.
And they've captured the sensibility of it well. They've also surrounded him with a bunch of fun and interesting characters. So even when Grant Gustin's not on the screen, there's something fun to watch.
He's got, I would say this, I would, it's hard to argue against NCIS or The Big Bang Theory, but taking those two out of the equation, I would say they have the best ensemble cast on television right now.
I would be hard pressed to disagree. I think it's they've got fun stuff. I mean,
they've got fun stuff, and you know, who would have thought Jesse L. Martin, after all those years on Law and Order, would essentially play another cop, but be so different, so engaging on the screen? Carlos Valdez and Daniel Panabaker are wonderful as those two characters. I'm worried about Tom Cavanaugh. I was worried about it with season one. I'm so glad they found a way to bring him back in season two. I got to hope and figure there's a way to bring him back for season three.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The one I worry about is Jesse Martin.
I think
at the end of the next season is a danger point for him.
Yeah, it's possible.
His character is central to everything that goes on.
Yeah.
He's, you know, the father figure for a lot of these characters. He's the cop. He's interfacing with Star Labs. I mean, you take him out of the equation, and it changes the dynamic fundamentally. And
this might be a little spoilery if you haven't read or seen the final episode of this show, and I'm not going to go nuts or give out anything too big, but we did see something from Berlanti and crew and Gustafson, really. Next season, they will be doing Flashpoint.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I thought the way they ended this season pretty much dictated how the first at least episode, if not few episodes, go next season.
I completely agree. But when you've got someone like Grant saying, we're going to do Flashpoint for season three, I'm worried it's not the first episode or two.
Man, if it goes longer than that, I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, so do I. But I think it's possible. I think it could be the majority of the third season arc.
Wow.
Or possibly at least until the Christmas break.
Man, that has the hallmarks of being that turning point for the show. Not the jump the shark moment, but the however you would phrase it for those people who got off once upon a time and are now wanting it to fail.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. I love the show. I think they did a good job casting it, having a good, fun take on The Flash. I think also with Arrow, essentially they're doing Batman there, but they're doing it really well, and they're not pretending it's Batman. It's Arrow.
It is absolutely Arrow, and I think the biggest advantage that show has, even though I don't watch it, when I have watched the crossovers, is what's her name?
Felicity. Emily Brett Rickard?
Yes. She makes that show interesting in almost a way you could not, that character could not exist in Batman.
Agreed. Yeah, you couldn't. What's interesting is the way they left this season.
Mm-hmm.
The only characters I feel narratively are guaranteed to be back next season are her, Felicity, and Arrow. So the rest, they can... And the way they ended the previous season, I mean, hell, they could have ended the series there. I'm glad they didn't. But they've ended on notes where there's more to tell, but not a particular something to tell, a la Flash and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think the way those two shows ended was very different. Likewise, I think with Legends of Tomorrow, they ended on a teaser of, hey, this is what we're going to introduce next season. Isn't this cool?
And I'm absolutely. Like, absolutely. Another great show. It's going to be interesting, as you guys talked about in that episode, though, if they lost a cast member, it appears they've lost. I think that hurts that show a lot.
Yes. The other thing that worries me is the talk I'm hearing around Legends of Tomorrow is, like, there was always a plan to have a rotating cast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, wait a sec. I didn't feel that way at all first season.
It didn't, but even in the first season, we churned through some people. Some of them came back. Some of them... We churned through some people for a while.
First off, nobody on that time ship seemed to have never died. Many of them exactly. In the course of this season.
Exactly. And some of them were gone for four or five or more episodes. And, you know, when they came back, you kind of went, oh, that was a cool way to bring them. But you didn't necessarily know they were coming back. Heatwave being, I think, the most interesting example. I did not see that coming at all.
I sort of did, sort of didn't. It was one of those that when he appeared to die, I don't think so.
No.
I guess to me, it's like Babylon 5. You look at the credits from season to season of the five seasons, and there's some definite change in rotation. Oh, we're telling stories where fighter pilots are a little more involved. So one of them is in part of the lead. Oh, another season we're doing stuff with telepaths. So one of them's a lead character type thing. And as the nature of the story changed, the people in play changed. I don't get that feeling from Legends of Tomorrow. Sure, there may have been people who seemed to sit out an episode or two or three or whatever, but it felt like this is the team. And now they're doing it. No. We're going to keep rotating through. And that's cool. That's fine. It just feels as a viewer like a change. Yeah. But if they're going to be able to bring in a bunch of other characters that they're kind of teasing and stuff, that's, I think, part of where they could really build out the DC universe, multiverse, whatever, expand the, test out various characters.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get some where it's like, that one's got some potential, or maybe that didn't work, but if we do this take on that, this other similar character, I mean, I would like to see them get to where they could do more, not more and more shows. I think there's a threshold amount of how many you can do concurrently. But have something always waiting in the wings to where if one show ends for whatever reason, like, say, your top-rated show out of the bunch decides to do a comic book storyline for a little too long one season. Hopefully that won't be the case. But I like the fact that they've gotten away from the whole Vandal Savage premise of the show, because I think that was kind of limiting it and anchoring it in not a good way.
I don't think we've seen the end of that.
I'm not saying we've seen the end of it. I'm saying it's no longer the central threat that they're always fighting.
Yeah. Him and the people he was working for, arguably, you could say, have gone away. I don't think that will be the case.
I think they've gone on the back burner. I think they will pop back up. They have to.
They have to.
But it's not every damn episode we've got to deal with that.
Yeah.
And again, I'd like to see them doing a little bit more exploring, seeing some of the things they've teased over an Arrow or Flash or whatever. I mean, this season alone, between Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, and Supergirl, we have seen more live-action versions of DC characters just this season than we probably ever have before, it feels like.
Yep. And don't forget Gotham's still doing quite well, too.
I always forget Gotham because I've watched so little of this season. That's on the list to catch up on, but that'll probably be after Comic-Con.
Yeah. Again, not watching Arrow, you mentioned Stephen Amell and the Felicity Smoke character being the two that can't kind of almost have to come back. Even though I don't watch the show, seemingly from what I've heard, can they do that show without David Ramsey?
It changes the dynamic, but yes.
Okay, fair enough.
The way that show is structured, the way certain things were playing out...
That's true. From what I hear, they almost did a season without Steven, so.
Yeah, which is a tough thing to do, but I'm wondering if next season is going to put a nice close on the whole island flashback stuff, and kind of if and when they get a sixth season, where they go with that. But it's one that's been well constructed. They've got the writing on that show is phenomenal, because you can take the island sequences and kind of watch through them. My sister actually took a little time and kind of edited them together for a season or two. Uh-huh. It's like a 2-hour movie or an hour and a half.
No. Which is funny. However, I did notice a few weeks ago, Drew posted on the forum as we were kind of talking about some of the season finales. Dear Arrow, another great season, but I'm good with the island flashbacks already.
Yeah, and that's why I think they're gonna wrap it up after next season.
Yeah.
But the fact that they can have the flashback sequences tell its own narrative and tie into the individual episodes amazes me.
Yeah. Well, Lost did it for years.
No. Lost did flashbacks for years.
Yes.
They didn't interconnect. They didn't have quite the solid game plan. And okay. You certainly could never watch all of the flashback sequences for a season and get anything remotely resembling a coherent narrative.
Fair enough.
So, but it's obviously the idea of the flashback came from Lost. No argument there. Still haven't watched iZombie. Glad to hear it's getting renewed.
I love that show. I think it's great. For you who turned me on to, and then I marathon through them all, Veronica Mars, I can't believe you haven't gotten around to iZombie. You will enjoy that show.
It's been a busy TV season. This is definitely on the list.
And don't let the word zombie scare you.
I'm willing to give this one, this is the kind of show that I would give a little bit more leeway to in terms of do they do some gross stuff or not, which I'm not saying they do.
They don't really.
That's good to hear. But Rob Thomas, the Veronica Mars connection and stuff, that gives it a definite edge in my mind. Rose McIver, I've seen her in other stuff. I think she's a good actress. So yeah, this is just a matter of me finding the time with my sister for us to marathon through. At some point, I need to get into a kind of a cadence where I've got the preview spotlight to where they're a little quicker and easier to edit. I've got the numbers a little bit better and stuff to where they're a little less time consuming. And I've got at least 2 weekends where we can just spend a Saturday afternoon marathoning some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Once we can do that, and that'll probably be like after Comic-Con or something, then we can catch up on a lot of these shows and get them back into the regular rotation.
Yeah. Vampire Diaries, The 100, The Originals, Jane the Virgin, Rain, and Crazy Ex-Girlfriends, the lowest rated show on television there at the bottom, all got renewed. The CW kind of surprised everybody in way back in like January or February, renewed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And then we saw the fall schedule and we went, wait a minute. You've got more shows than you have time slots. Containment, by the way, which was a late show, again, we only got 6 of the 10 episodes, I believe, that have aired so far on these numbers. Containment will not be back. It's a really good show, and its ratings are fine, but
the commercials suck.
Yeah, me and you talked about it. Once I started talking to you about what the show was about, you're like, ooh, that sounds better than I thought, because I didn't watch it based on the commercials.
We were watching some of the commercials for this, and both of us are like, yeah, we're avoiding that show. But then when you were describing it, it's like, wait, that's not the show I'm seeing commercials for. It's the same name.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing, but not the same story.
And as I've said, I'm actually predicting Crazy Ex-Girlfriends will be the show that we finally get a 0.0 out of.
Wow, okay.
There was a bunch of us that thought it might happen this season.
Hmm.
It didn't, to be fair. It only had 1.1. So, but lots of 0.2s. We'll see. It's coming back. Again, everything's coming back. Except, like I said, we don't have time slots for some of these. Rain, we do not have a time slot for.
Do you think they're going to go with kind of a, like a split season of, okay, we're going to have a little bit where we do Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl. Those go on hiatus, and then some other shows kind of kick in?
There's 3 shows we don't have time slots for, and those are Rain, The 100, and iZombie.
Okay.
We do have two new shows, No Tomorrow and Frequency, will all be making their appearance on the CW along with Supergirl.
What's the premise of that first one?
Which one?
The No Tomorrow?
No Tomorrow.
Is that the one where they've got a time machine? And I was seeing some trailers for some upcoming shows, and a few of them sounded pretty interesting.
It's listed as a one-hour romantic comedy.
Okay, maybe not then.
I
think I need to find some time, get my sister to help organize, and we may do another one of those previews.
It's based it's based on a Brazilian series which aired in 2002. Follows a woman who becomes with a free-spirited guy who inspired her to make an apocalyptic list of things to do before the world ends, which he claims will be in 8 months and 12 days. So it's the bucket list as a romantic comedy.
Got it. Absolutely not the show I was thinking.
The other one is Frequency.
Based on the movie?
Let's take a look and see what I can find out about it.
Using radio to talk to the dad from decades back or something? Not that I've seen the movie.
Inspired by the Gregory Holbert film of the same name.
Okay.
Detective Sullivan discovers she's able to speak to her deceased father via ham radio. So, yes, based on the movie.
Cool.
Those are the two new shows. A few shows that we don't know what'll happen to. I'm hoping iZombie makes it, because that's the one I watch. As far as Rain and the 100 go, who knows? This happened with Beauty and the Beast a year or so ago with the CW, and it ended up getting a 10-episode final season that aired in June. So it may be close to a year before some of these we ever actually see another episode of.
What's funny is last year my sister and I went up to Toronto for the convention up there,
mm-hmm.
and as we were walking from the hotel the couple of blocks down to the convention center, or maybe we were walking back, at one of the points we noticed this thing, piece of paper taped to a building, and it was a notice of shooting, because they were going to be shooting Beauty and the Beast, mm-hmm. you know, like a day or two after we left.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, wait, they're still producing that? Because at that point it hadn't aired for a while.
Yeah.
And then it was, I think, probably for this fourth season that they finally, or whichever season they finally aired.
Yeah, they finally aired a summer after not having been on for over a year.
Yeah.
Yep. Which will probably happen to at least one of these shows. Hopefully not too many of them. But yeah, we'll see what happens. So we can't say anything's being canceled.
Fair enough.
But yeah, we'll be excited. This is going to become the DC Comics Network.
Well, and I'm really hoping they can do something particularly fun for a crossover between all the DC Universe stuff.
Absolutely.
I think Berlanti has really figured out what works for the DC characters in live action. And, you know, again, we've gotten Vixen, we've gotten so many other characters just tangentially. I want to see them keep going with this.
I completely agree. And you said, there's a limit. But yes, Greg Berlanti, unless he is the Flash or has a time machine, still only has the same 24 hours in his day that the rest of us do.
Well, I think there comes a point of there's only so many shows you could expect us to keep up with.
Also true.
You know, and four, you could do maybe a fifth. As long as they're good, keep them coming. But to me, I'd rather they pick their shows slowly and carefully and make sure they've got a character that they've got a solid take and direction with. Let's do another show.
The one that feels like it's about time to bring back to TV, but you got to find the take for it, is this. And I guess you could argue you don't need to because you've got Supergirl. You'd think Superman would have...
I would argue they're best off staying away from Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. I would stay with the solid second-tier characters, and there's so many of them. Go with essentially some of the satellite-era Justice Leaguers like they've been doing.
Well, Wonder Woman you almost have to stay away from. She's got her own movie coming up. You don't want to confuse the audience.
But I think if you could get the right actors... Ralph and Sue Digby, the Elongated Man.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this. It's me and you that really want to see Ralph and Sue back.
But the thing is, it's something that you could do as a procedural and get that audience. It's got a little of the wacky superhero stuff that would make it feel like a Fringe, a Supernatural, or, you know, something mm-hmm. like that. It's something that you could use to ease people into some of these other shows. And it's also something you could do a backdoor pilot on The Flash for.
Yep. So. And again, if you want to go goofy slash darker, Dead Man's always out there, too. Another character I pushed on the Mayor Report.
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And speaking of Dead Man, just as a quick aside on the comic stuff, Marvel is essentially doing a version of the character called Mosaic.
Interesting.
They've got a new character who is apparently an Inhuman that, when he goes through the metamorphosis process, loses his body and can inhabit other people a la Dead Man. They don't phrase it that way because it's Marvel and Dead Man's a DC character, but very similar concept.
Dead Man, or I was going to say Dead Man or more Jericho?
Dead Man, because he no longer has a body.
That's true.
And Jericho was mute. But yes, that was the other connection I made.
All right. I want to move on over to Fox, where we've got two more DC shows.
Yeah. Take a look at that stuff.
So we'll start at the top.
Sure.
They're two biggest shows, no doubt about it. Empire and the 10-episode Bring Back of the X-Files, far and away their most successful shows. Nothing surprising about either of that other than how they're going to do the contract negotiations to figure out a way to bring the X-Files back for more
mm-hmm.
episodes. It almost has to happen.
Yeah.
The Simpsons on season 27 keeps chugging along. Then we get Lucifer. Did you watch this show?
I have not. It's another one that's on the list. And technically, I don't think this is a DC show so much as a Vertigo show. And I'm not sure who owns the rights to the character because of that.
That's true, because it's weird. It's got the DC logo,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of in the production companies when they run through those at the end of the show. But I believe in the credits, it says based on characters created by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, because I was thinking it was the character that came out of the Sandman stuff.
It is. Well, but he got his own book.
He got his own book.
MacReady? Who wrote that for all those years?
I have no idea. I didn't read it. It's a Vertigo stuff, and I don't go too deep in Vertigo. It tends to be darker than I like, Vertigo.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Who wrote? Yeah.
It looks like a good show. The commercials we saw, we liked, my sister and I. Laura German is in the show, and wasn't she in a season of Hawaii Five-0?
I gave up on that show halfway through the first season, so I don't know, but I will.
It looked like a good cast in addition to a good premise.
Yes. The guy playing Lucifer is wonderful. Tom Ellis is really good. Most of the other, no other real regulars on that show.
Okay.
Other than her and Laura German. I think the show's really good. So yeah, nothing bad to say about that. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was outstanding. Family Guy keeps chugging along. Now Gotham, another strong second season. And I think it got better. I think the second season's better than the first season. I think the second half of the second season is better than any half season they've done at all.
That's good to hear. We got about 5 episodes in, and there were a few things in those first few episodes. It's like, we can't watch this while I eat. And it ended on a note that made it very easy to stall out on continuing, mm-hmm. and there were other things to watch. So it's on the list to catch up on.
Did you make it to the point where they brought in Michael Chiklis?
Yes, but just barely.
He stayed with the show for the remainder of the season.
That doesn't surprise me. He's a comic
I think that was a huge addition to the cast. I think it's exactly what they needed. I think he essentially replaced someone else, and it was a far superior replacement.
They've got, I think, some really good writing. They've got an incredible cast. They've got some fun characters. It's just competition for time is part of my problem with it, and there were a few things they did that both at the in the first season and again at the beginning of the second season that were just a little harder core and darker than I needed.
I can see that. I wish I could tell you it gets better. It probably doesn't.
I was going to say I don't think it does. And it's not that I'm not going to watch it. It's just I'm not going to watch it while I'm eating, for sure, in some cases.
Yeah.
And I just need to be kind of in the I don't say the right mood, but.
And talk about a C or D list character essentially making Hugo Strange one of the main villains of the season was a stroke of genius and worked so well.
Hugo Strange is the kind of character, though, that at times he's like nowhere to be found. Other times he's
everywhere's.
Yeah, a major factor in the comics.
Yeah, well, 52.
Yeah. I like how, again, they've got a rich playground with Gotham City. And they're leveraging it without abusing it, I think.
Yeah, no, I think they're doing a great job. I like all the actors. There's a few actors, unfortunately, and I don't blame the actors. There's a few characters that they gave comic book names to that ended up not working out and haven't really been on the show since. And I feel like we might have wasted some potential characters in the universe for the future.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to think. Yeah, we saw Crispus Allen in the early season.
Yeah, Crispus Allen and Renee Montoya. That was in like the first few episodes and then gone.
And Sarah Essen.
Yeah.
In the first season. And all of these. And they could all absolutely return. One or two could not. That is correct. Some of them could return without. But yes, it does feel like they might have tried to jam a few too many people in that comic fans would recognize, and now you're kind of like, well, we can't really bring them back unless we explain.
Well, keep in mind, version. In Smallville, they had Jimmy Olsen, and then they introduced the real Jimmy Olsen later.
Oh, there you go.
And it was kind of, really? But okay.
But no, I like that show. Rosewood's next, another really good show. This will be the heir apparent to Bones, is kind of their procedural, you know, CSI type show.
Mm-hmm.
And then some comedies, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Last Man on Earth, New Girls. Scream Queens got renewed, which I thought was kind of a borderline show as far as its numbers went. I loved it. It feels like it doesn't belong on broadcast television.
I can see that.
They did a campy humor version of horror. It's awesome if you're into that. How big an audience you expect to draw in prime time on a major network is beyond me.
That seems like the kind of show that you're better off doing on, like, a cable channel.
During the summer?
Well, something where it's geared more towards the niche.
Yep.
And therefore you can go a little further than you might be able to on broadcast TV.
Well, no, I think that's one of the things I loved about it. Because they didn't really go to extremes. It was more funny. It was okay. Camp. It was absolutely tongue-in-cheek stuff. It was hilarious. But yeah. Bob's Burgers, of course, will be back. Bones, on its 11th season, did get renewed for a short return. This was a show I wanted to mention. Bones is continuing to air new shows. It's got a week or two before it airs its season finale.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised the show that Fox, by doing that, has essentially said, we're giving up on this show. We're not really playing it in season anymore. But did order a small number of episodes for a final season. So it's interesting. I still watch the show, still love the show. It'll be its 12th season when it returns next year.
All right.
Cooper Barrett's Guide to Surviving Life, one of the worst shows to air on television this season, is not coming back.
I don't think I even heard about that one.
Yeah, it was on Sunday nights. It aired 7 or 8 times. Then there are 13 episodes. They've aired 2 a week ago, and I think they're airing 2 this week. it was a college comedy, not a great show. Grandfathered and the Grinder, Rob Lowe and
John
Stamos's return to television will last one season only.
Well, his return, yeah, to television. His return to Netflix or whatever with Fuller House.
Did very well, supposedly.
Did well enough they're getting another season.
Yes. Netflix doesn't like to actually give out numbers. They say things like, this is doing really well. This is our most successful show. Well,
yeah.
Successful based on what?
Successful enough to keep going with, which is ultimately the only sign of success.
Absolutely true. Yep. Fuller House, of course, is coming back. Sleepy Hollow got renewed. I think it's going to end up on Friday nights, probably with Bones for that short season. Then we can get into some of Border Town, an animated show that was absolutely atrocious, is not coming back. Second Chance, the lowest rated show on the network. I'm glad it got a full season for its fans. They left it alone in a bad time slot and let it play itself out. So if you were a fan, you got to see it.
That's cool.
But yeah, it had no chance of returning. And we can go back to Minority Report, because I know you enjoyed this show.
Yeah, I watched that, and that was with my sister and stuff. That was one that when we saw the first episode, both of us kind of looked at each other and said, this will last the season and no more. It reeked of, this is going to be a little expensive to do because it's set in the near sci-fi future sort of a thing. And we've seen so many shows like this, regardless of if they're any good or not, or even if they're really good. Almost Human, a couple others. They go for the season, poof, gone, that's it. This, I was not surprised it went that way. What did surprise me is how it had a really good narrative arc over the season and played out with a satisfying conclusion.
Good! It's one of those, I'm a huge Philip K. Dick fan, so I still kind of want to go check this out.
I recommend it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was good. It continues from the movie. It's about 10 years later. They pick stuff up, and it makes sense.
And it's from the movie universe, not
yes.
a retelling of a story or from the book.
The precogs 10 years later.
Okay.
After the future, whatever the program was called, was shut down, what happened to them.
Pre-crime.
Pre-crime, yeah. One of the actresses who played one of the tech people for the police, she was seen also later this season on Quantico
mm-hmm.
as one of the second round of students or trainees or whatever that were brought in. She used quite a bit. She's a solid actress. And then Alex Zano, I think it is, who played one of the twins from the pre-crime precogs, is cast in something else coming up. I'm trying to remember what. But they had a good cast, and they had good writing. It's just one of those, they had very heavy special effect needs, which they did well, but it's the kind of thing, it's like, this is more involved and more expensive to shoot than your typical show, which is why I wasn't surprised it ended after the season.
Well, and not that many people were watching it, unfortunately.
Well,
other things aside, it didn't get watched that much.
I just think it needed to have a higher level of ratings than just enough to subsist to justify the production pain.
And for anyone interested, John and Kay talked about that episode. It's a roundtable that can be found back in February 5th of 2016. You can find it back in the archives if you want to look for it.
And again, I recommend checking the show out. It's good stuff.
Yep.
Now, the other one on this list that I want to just talk about briefly.
Sure.
Houdini and Doyle. This is one that I had just heard about recently. It's on my radar. It sounds cool. I should check it out. But that's about as far as I've gotten.
Again, this is another show that I quit tracking because they debuted it in May. And I believe it was supposed to be a 10 episode limited thing. But again, the season ended after only 4 episodes had aired. So I didn't really track this one.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea if there will be any more. Its ratings for the 4 that did air during season tell me there probably won't be any more.
Okay, that makes sense.
But yeah.
Houdini and Arthur Conan Doyle teaming up to fight crimes.
Yep.
Sounds cool.
Yep.
Whether it's any good or not, again, I just haven't the time to check out.
I believe they were contemporaries. Unfortunately, I believe they also resided on opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean most of their lives.
Ah, details. One hops the Concorde. Oh, wait, that's a century later. Never mind.
The Titanic.
That's a good plan.
So quickly, the shows that were canceled off Fox this season. Cooper Barrett's Guide to Surviving Life, Grandfathered, The Grinder, Minority Report, Border Town, and Second Chance. Houdini and Doyle, again, I didn't make a prediction about, nor do we know its fate. And The X-Files, someone is working very hard to figure out a way to get that show back again.
Absolutely. If it was successful, why not?
Exactly.
Leave money on the table not to.
Yep.
Shall we jump over to NBC?
Absolutely. Our final network and the ratings champion for the season.
You know, it's funny because I'm looking at this list of shows, and one I watched all of, another one is on the list to watch, another one I haven't finished the first season of. and a few others two others are kind of on the list to check out when I get a chance, because I know somebody who's connected to one of the shows. But most of these I don't watch.
I can tell you I watched two of these shows and have an interest. I used to watch one of these shows and would like to watch it again and just have to make the time to get around to catching up again. But I don't watch a lot of these shows either.
I'll be honest, a couple of these I'm not even sure I've heard of.
Well, let's start at the top.
Okay.
A show that plummeted from where it started, but obviously well enough to return and doing very well. Blindspot, the woman with all the tattoos and amnesia that I believe has something to do with a terrorist attack.
I watched the first episode of that.
There you go. Okay. As did most of the country, its first episode ratings are astounding.
Mm-hmm.
And continued to slide from there, kind of like Quantico, actually. But it started stronger and dropped harder. then the Chicago shows. Fire, Med, PD, and Law & Order SVU. And we're getting another Chicago show. I believe we're getting a show called Chicago Law to add to these.
Interesting.
All doing very well for NBC. Then the Comedy Superstore. The Blacklist, which is a show I watched half of the first season and kind of would like to get back caught up on, but haven't
That's
got around to.
One that I stalled out on. It looked to have an episode that was looking maybe not to be a watch while we eat dinner sort of fair mm-hmm. venue or whatever. But it's James Spader, so it's one exactly. I want to get back on.
Yeah, and you and I think stopped at the exact same episode, you because you were eating dinner. Me, because my wife was watching it, and I believe the kids were up, and she looked at me and went, "Hey, I don't want to watch this, and are you insane? The kids are still up."
Yeah.
First comic booky type show, Heroes Reborn, or Heroes Cheaper, aired 10 episodes. They did okay, but not quite good enough to return.
I was thinking it was 13 episodes they did.
Did they? They might have. Did they air two some nights, and I might have only picked the two-hour average instead of...
That might be. They probably yeah. did. This yeah. is one that is on my list to watch, and I just haven't gotten to.
I enjoyed it. It wasn't as good as the first season, but, you know, that first season was really awesome, and then that show didn't...
I was going to say, most of the rest of the Heroes wasn't as good as the first season.
Exactly. This is, I would argue, better than some of the end of Heroes. Unfortunately, not coming back.
It was set up such that I wasn't expecting it to come back.
Yeah.
It seemed to be getting positioned as a, we're doing a 13 episode or 10 or whatever it was. Yeah. And that's that, which is fine.
Again, limited series means limited number of episodes in the season. They will make more if enough people watch it.
Yes, obviously. If it were a huge hit, we'd get Heroes Reborn again.
Exactly. Shades of Blue will return. That's, it's Jennifer Lopez doing a procedural.
That's right, okay.
Yeah.
That one I've heard about, it didn't seem like something I wanted to watch.
Yeah. Mysteries of Laura, a show that we talked about last season. We're surprised it got renewed. One of those rare second season cancellations. This show never figured out what it was. We said that a year ago and nothing changed.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't sure if it was a family drama. We weren't sure if it was a police procedural. Or wasn't sure if it was. There's two different possibilities of the family drama. Deborah Messing, of course, was fine, but that show felt lost.
Well, and also the trailer they had for it originally seemed to be like a condensed version of the pilot.
Okay.
And gave me absolutely no reason to watch it.
Well, yeah, because you're like, if it's a procedural, I don't want all this other stuff. If it's a dating show, I don't want... If it's a family, yeah.
Well, and it's like, you've given me the plot of the pilot episode. Why do I need to watch that?
Yeah.
And I didn't like one of the things they revealed in the thing. It's like, oh, you're going to do that with that character? It's yeah. like, I like that actor, so, well, you've given... If you hadn't given me that one little tidbit, I might have watched it thinking that actor would have been on it. But anyways.
Yep. Carmichael Show, second season comedy, will be back for another short season.
That's one I don't even know what is. It's not hit my radar.
Yeah. Telenovela was behind the stage sitcom about a Spanish language soap. Not coming back. It, what's her name from Desperate Housewives? It was her big return to television and did not work out. Crowded. Patrick Warburton's return to television also did not work out. I actually kind of enjoyed that show. Grimm, we talked about. Very steady for a Friday night.
Five seasons and continuing. Can't go wrong with that, yeah.
Exactly. Why don't you take the next one, because I believe there's an episode about this as well, and I enjoyed the show, too.
The Player. This is one that was a basic premise. It was a twist on a procedural show kind of a thing. Wesley Snipes, who's the other actor? I forget. He's been in some other stuff. It was the first time I'd seen it. Very charismatic, good, strong lead for the show. And it was basically he was roped into to doing missions for this casino thing that Wesley Snipes was running. And it was...
I'm assuming you're talking about Philip Winchester?
Yes, Philip Winchester. Yep. Yeah. Great. Did an excellent job on the show.
I thought Charity Wakefield did a phenomenal job as Cassandra.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it had the three leads, all of which were incredibly strong. Some of the fight sequences were incredibly well done. Some good action, some good plot. Who can you trust? A lot going for it. But they cut it off kind of midstream or whatever. There were things they were teasing. They didn't have a clean ending.
Well, they only got 9 episodes, maybe 10. I think it was nine. It never found an audience. It was clear kind of from the start it probably wasn't coming back.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like I said, I enjoyed the show too a lot. I think it's a premise that could have made it. You talk about a premise that could be converted to a comic book.
Yeah.
I mean, some indie publisher could get this license, possibly very cheaply, and probably make a very interesting book on it based on that premise.
Ages ago, there was back in the days when syndicated stuff was doing a lot of original material.
There still was syndicated.
Yeah, there was the concept, though, of kind of doing rotating 2-hour movies, and this is the kind of thing that I think could have really played well in that set.
Yep.
Do one of these a quarter or every other month or whatever. Spend a little more time on the action and stuff, a little bit more deeper mission or what have you. I thought it was a lot of fun. I was sorry to see it go, but it was a short-lived show.
Heartbeat, also coming, I don't even remember this one.
I was going to say, I have no idea what this is.
I'm assuming based on the name of it, it was a medical drama.
I was going to assume either that or a love thing, but, you know, a romantic drama.
Medical drama starring Melissa George.
Oh, interesting. She was in Alias, she was in, was it Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
She was in the 30 Days a Night movie.
Which I haven't watched.
Yeah, she was actually a regular season or two of The Good Wife.
Hmm.
She was in a show we talked about a few seasons back called The Slap. Yeah, she did a bunch of episodes of the Timothy Roth show, Tim Roth show, Lie to Me.
Oh, okay.
Remember back to that. And you probably remember from the early days of Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen her in a number of things. She's a good actress. I, again, never watched this because I never heard of this.
Again, not returning. Game of Silence, another comedy that's very forgettable. Undateable after 3 seasons near the bottom, per Crystal Leah, just could not make this work, has been put out of its misery.
Mm.
You, Me, and the Apocalypse, Rob Lowe's other comedy, that was a weird show that didn't have a place to fit.
So Rob Lowe had 2 failed shows this season?
Sort of, yes.
This and Grindr.
Yeah, You, Me, and the Apocalypse, I think they bought cheap from England, and while he was in it, I don't think he was the star of it.
Okay. I was going to say, if he was even remotely the lead of 2 failed things in 1 season, that's impressive.
No, he was a priest. He was a regular guest star.
Okay, let's put it that way. That's fair.
The things, of course, we're not talking about that... besides the Chicago shows and Blindspot and Blacklist and some of the shows that did really well for NBC, the reason they were the overall ratings champion, Sunday Night Football and The Voice are still unbelievable ratings juggernauts.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because Sunday Night Football is still Sunday Night Football. And I know ABC actually recently fired its head of programming. We got a new one, and they were kind of where we finished third. The fact that they finished third actually is a miracle. For a network in the United States that doesn't have football, to beat several of the networks that do have football is an astounding feat for ABC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the football just brings in the fans.
It's a complete game changer. Like I said, the Super Bowl alone is worth more than a 0.1 for the season average.
Hmm.
ABC is doing a heck of a job. It's going to be interesting to see. NBC is getting more football this coming season. I believe they split the Thursday night deal with CBS, which I'm sure CBS is not happy about.
Yeah.
I
thought there was plenty to be watching this season, just from my personal tastes and stuff. And I'm glad some of the shows I was liking are that they're continuing to have enough success to stay on the air. Little upset that a few of them didn't, but, them's the breaks.
Yep.
I've seen a couple of trailers for upcoming shows.
Sure. What are you seeing that looks interesting?
I'm forgetting the name of some of them. One was a time travel show that looked pretty interesting.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of time travel shows, a show you and Kay ended up doing a show on and enjoying, which surprised me because I was excited from day one about it, 12 Monkeys is back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Second season's as good as the first, a little different tone, but still very good.
I'm wondering if they fiddled with the rules of time travel a little in terms of their writing, but it is top-notch in terms of quality and thinking it through, and that's one of the shows that we're very actively staying current on.
Yep.
So that's another one that in a couple of weeks, when it finishes its season, maybe a month or so, we'll probably do an episode in short order. Just because, again, we're really enjoying that. But there was another one where they've got, like, a time machine of two males and a female as the leads bouncing through time or some such. There was another one that was, like, a medical drama. I want to say Pure Genius, but it's basically a rich guy who's basically using all of the money and smarts and stuff from kind of the Silicon Valley sector and applying it to medical research.
Hmm.
And it's one that seemed like it would have a little bit of the rip from the headlines, medical thing of the week. And, let's toss this technology at it. That could either be really inspiring or really cheesy.
You never know.
But what I saw in the trailer looked more on the inspiring side.
Well, and like you said, it's the summertime cable shows. And Kay have done episodes on Lost Ship. It's coming back.
Yeah.
Not Lost. Last Ship. I'm sorry.
Last Ship. We've got a few other shows. Like I said, we just recorded the other night, Person of Interest. We've got Castle that once we watch the final four episodes that we haven't watched yet, we'll do an episode on that. If and when we catch up on, and it's a win, Gotham, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that, we'll do episodes on those. It's just there's so much to watch. And some of those are really fun episodes to do, but it takes a while to watch, 10, 12 hours of television.
Yeah. No, and I actually think sci-fi is doing some great stuff. Like I said, 12 Monkeys is back and doing really well. Wynonna Earp, the IDW comic, started as an Image book, doing really well, and I really enjoy that show. The Magicians, based on the Lev Grossman novel. Think Harry Potter is...
That's another one that's hit my radar.
Frat boys and... kind of nihilist college kids as opposed to cute, happy-go-lucky grade school children.
If I didn't have this whole day job thing...
Yeah, I know!
I'd be watching a lot more and recording a lot more, but gotta pay the rent.
Yep.
Actually, I don't. I have a house, so gotta pay the mortgage, and it's a long story, too. Anyways, I don't have time to watch all this stuff. Plus read all the comics, plus do all the podcasting, etc. But thanks for doing all the number crunching on this.
Anytime.
And putting all this together. I find these fascinating to do, these discussions. Because I like seeing just how these shows are doing. And again, it's each network, it's what's surviving on there. And then again, how are they doing compared to other ones? Looking forward to the next season. Again, Supergirl moving to CW. That'll be cool to see how that works. And just kind of what new... shows come on the air and how that changes the playing field.
And the last question Kay sent us was about, she noticed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And some other shows getting to Netflix, Hulu, getting streaming services faster. Yeah, absolutely is happening. Netflix just signed a contract for The Flash and Arrow for an insane amount of money per episode.
Mm-hmm.
As they did a year ago with Gotham and some other things. And she asked, how did she phrase this question?
if some people
some
may
people
start
may
waiting.
Start waiting until they can binge a show versus watching weekly. Is that a possibility? Absolutely. Is that a concern for the broadcasters? Theoretically, yes. Except the deals with the streaming services are made with the producers, not the broadcasters.
So even if it hurts the broadcasters, the producers still make the money and can keep the show going? Is the theory?
No. Because there's not that much money. They as expensive as it is to produce an hour,
fair
22
enough.
Episode, hour long season, they still need the broadcasters. But they're making enough that they can make it cheap enough that the broadcasters will stick with it if it's borderline.
Because it's interesting, because the question she's essentially asking is there a danger of people waiting for the trade? If you put it into comic book terms. You know, if you don't get the serialized installment and you wait for it to pile up and then just plow through it through a different mechanism, is that hurting the content creation?
Yeah. And the issue, and I think I mentioned this to her when I kind of talked to her about it, potentially, yes. Again, well, the streaming is one of the great boogeymen, and people are still watching a lot of TV.
Well, I mean, I've got Netflix. I watch it once in a while, but more often than not, we're in front of the TV and stuff. It's just, it's. I think part of it is age and habit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the younger viewers are going to be more likely to be doing the streaming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's also a generational decision in so much as if you are the kid in the house and you've got your tablet you can stream on and the parents are controlling the TV, you're going to watch what you want to watch on the tablet or whatever streaming. It just makes sense. But I think that's something that over time we're going to see potentially the habit shift as more and more people think streaming is kind of the default setting.
Yep.
But that's a generational change.
But what I was going to say, as I said at the time I was asked this question, that is more it's a media issue.
Mm-hmm.
The faster the streaming doesn't hurt broadcast nearly as much as it hurt DVD and Blu-ray sales.
Absolutely, and it can actually help the broadcast if you've got the time to go, hey, I haven't watched the last few seasons of Arrows, let me catch up on it and now watch it on broadcast for the next season.
Exactly, and I've done that, Breaking Bad, I think I missed the first two seasons. I streamed them on Netflix and then started with season three. Once upon a time, I streamed season one and then started watching season two live, and shortly thereafter I decided I didn't like the show anymore. But again, it at least got me to give it a shot, which I never would have done had I not streamed the first season.
Absolutely. Keeping that on-ramp for latecomers,
yep,
very important.
So yeah, I think getting to streaming faster and quicker, always a good thing. Hulu, of course, always there, and people forget it's jointly owned by everybody except CBS,
mm-hmm,
because CBS has their own version, which, as far as anyone can tell, still no one has. but we'll see.
I think our first indication of how that CBS online stuff's going to do will come when we actually get some sort of substantial announcement about the new Star Trek show, mm-hmm, other than it's Star Trek, and there's a vertical line through the icon. If they tell us what time frame, which continuity, what's the basic premise of the show, if it's something that it's, oh, yeah, well, okay, fine, that's okay, but or if it's, wow, that looks really cool.
Again, I don't think any of that will play into how well that network's doing. I think what will tell us how well that network is doing is how quickly it goes from being a that network exclusive to, hey, it's going to air over here, hey, it's going to air over there, hey, it's going to be on this streaming service as well.
I guess my point is once we find out some information about the premise and the show,
mm-hmm,
that may tell us how quickly the other stuff happens. In other words, it's if you've got something that looks really fun and exciting and people it gets some buzz,
mm-hmm,
then it's actually got a chance of doing its own thing for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's something that people look at, kind of like how Star Trek Beyond doesn't seem to be getting a whole lot of positive buzz, it's another Star Trek thing, then it's almost a foregone conclusion that sooner rather than later it's going to pop up, be it on Hulu, Netflix, wherever. And
well, you were... I still say it's going to end up on the CW.
Probably. And I'm fine with that.
You're a bigger Star Trek fan than I. Did it feel like Enterprise had a bit of that? Because I remember, because I was kind of into the Next Generation and Deep Space. I got into the Next Generation when it came out, and I kind of slowly fell off as the subsequent shows came on. By the time they got to Enterprise, it kind of seemed like Does anybody still care?
I think the problem, and yes, I'm a big Star Trek fan.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with starting with Next Generation is it was, and understandably and rightfully so, another 5-year mission, boldly going out, et cetera, et cetera. Granted, it lasted 7 years, whatever. But you get the idea. It's go back to basics and do what worked before, but actually, in this case, it actually worked better and lasted longer. But then the next premise was not let's boldly go somewhere. It's let's sit around and let people come to us on a space station.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. Also a little derivative, potentially, depending on who you ask and what you think, of Babylon 5. But then the next premise was, we've gone too far, we've got to go home.
We're lost,
let's go home.
It was lost in space. It was
lost in space, or going back to Earth, you could argue, almost a little bit of a Battlestar Galactica. It was the opposite of the boldly going and exploring. And then, since we've gone out, stayed somewhere, and come back, to then say, well, let's go do a prequel show before any of this ever happened. They should have kept moving forward. And what I would have been tempted to do, and maybe completely wrongfully so, was instead of doing something like Enterprise and the building of the Federation, do something like the premise for Andromeda, also a Gene Roddenberry show, where basically time had elapsed, the Federation equivalent had fallen, and they need to rebuild it. Now, I have no idea what the premise for this new Star Trek show is, if it'll be in the classic timeline, the movie timeline, or what. But knowing that right there will skew some people in either direction. Knowing if it is a prequel, a reboot, a retelling, or just a new take, or a new crew, or what. What do the effects look like? What do the uniforms look like? What does the ship look like? Is it action-based? Is it more cerebral? I'm not saying that there's any particular right or wrong decision on any of these things, but whatever decision they make on each of those things is going to have certain people saying, hey, that's cool, and other people saying, yeah, whatever, who cares?
Yeah.
Or somewhere in between. I want a good Star Trek show on the air.
Have you and Kay done in any of your other... Have you talked about the trailer? Have you guys seen the trailer? Has it been talked about on a podcast somewhere?
For the new show? The yes. only trailer?
No, not for the new show. For the movie, the trailer that's out.
Oh, for Beyond. No, we have not.
Okay.
The plan is to see that shortly after it comes out. It comes out while we're at Comic-Con. I don't know if we'll see it during Comic-Con or not. We might have that option. But that our plan is to record on that sooner rather than later. Or if for some reason that doesn't work out, we do it on Blu-ray. But the plan is to do that. And our plan between in the near term is, since we've done Into Darkness, the second movie, but somehow apparently didn't do the first of the reboot movies, to go ahead and rewatch that just to get back into the narrative universe and record about that.
That should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Again, I'm a Star Trek geek. I like the stuff. Matter of fact, I was just listening to the audiobook of Kobayashi Maru.
Oh, good.
Which was read by James Doohan.
You guys haven't done a book review yet.
You know, it's funny you say that. I'm sitting here next to a stack of books that I've thought about doing. Part of it is just finding the time. And technically, we have done a book review. All You Need Is Kill.
You're right. You did.
Book, a manga, and a movie.
You know, it's amazing. I saw that after listening to your review, I went and saw that film in the theater and really enjoyed it. And then they did something strange by renaming it by the time it made it to DVD. And I don't think I even bought the DVD because I had forgotten about it because they changed names on it.
Live, Die, Repeat or something. It was technically still the same name, but it was in much smaller print. And Live, Die, Repeat was on the big letters, making it look like the title.
Yeah, I remember kind of looking through the DVDs at like a Best Buy or something one day and going, what the heck is... Oh, yeah, I saw that movie. That was, okay. It was kind of weird. It kind of came and went all very quickly.
Oh, yeah, we saw that in the theater when we did, because it was clear the next week it wouldn't be there.
Yeah, and like I said, I went to see it after listening to your episode and really enjoyed it.
There are two movies in the theater as we record this that we've planned to go see but just haven't had the time. And if we're not careful, those may end up being Blu-ray episodes down the line just because we don't see them in the theater.
Do you want to share what those may be?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Out of the Shadows, or whatever the new movie is, and X-Men Apocalypse. It's just, we went to a convention, I've had other episodes to be doing, I got sick for a little bit, now we're starting to gear up towards Comic-Con, then there's Comic-Con, and you know, it's busy time of year. So, but, I mean, we'll get to them all eventually. It's literally, if I could spend more time consuming things and then talking about it on the podcast, and somehow that was like magically profitable, which I'm realistic enough to know it's not. I've got a stack of maybe a dozen books. I would love to just, not necessarily do an episode on each, but just do as an episode. Hey, here's what I think of these books.
Yeah.
But yeah, odds of that. Yeah, it's finding the time for all this.
Fair enough.
And speaking of time, we've been talking for quite some time.
We have.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.